Welcome to the Dastan Goy podcast, a collective exploration of Pakistani history and culture.
In this episode of Dastan Goy podcast, I get to sit down with renowned Pakistani filmmaker Umar Riaz. He talks about how his journey as a filmmaker has evolved as he moved from New York to Pakistan. Let's get straight to Umar.
Umar, thank you so much for being with us on the Dastan Goy podcast. I really appreciate you kind of taking out the time in the crazy times that we're in right now and coming to join us online across from Lahore. So to kind of begin, I'd love to hear your story of how did you get to where you are today? How did you get into directing films, directing music videos and the journalism stuff that you're doing? How did Umar become Umar?
Well, it's a very long story, but I'm going to try and make it brief and snappy as much as I can. I had never made a film before I actually got to graduate school, so that would be my master's. But it was always something on my mind. And, you know, film is such a dynamic medium that different media kind of play into it. So there's writing, there's photography, cinematography, acting performance, costumes, design, everything, right? So I had kind of inculcated various hobbies growing up. I love to do theater. I love to write. I picked up photography when I was about 15 years old, cataloging different sites that I saw in Lahore. And then I think funny enough, what precipitated my move into film was actually a kind of economic event, which is that I was graduating college and I'd done cinema studies, which is the academic study of film and English literature. And the great economic recession of 2008 hit, or 2009. And this is when Obama had just been elected president, and there was a sense of hope, but it was a tough time in the United States to be an international person working and trying to get a job there. So initially my plan was that, you know, I'd graduate, I'd work for a couple of years, get some experience, and then I'd apply to grad school. And then the recession hit, and, you know, I had cousins in the States who were doing very kind of safe, quote unquote, things like accounting and, you know, investment banking and so on and so forth. And the jobs that they had, they were all kind of laid off and they had to go back to Pakistan. So the safest thing at that time was to immediately apply to grad school. And so I shot my shot, as they say. And I applied to just two schools, which was because I wanted to stay in New York. So one was NYU Stitch School of the Arts, the graduate film program, and the other was Columbia. And luckily I got into NYU. I think I was the first Pakistani in that particular program, which has alumni such as Martin Scorsese, Spike Lee, Jim Jarmusch, Ang Lee, so on and so forth. And then began this kind of roller coaster ride of learning both the technical aspects of filmmaking, but also the storytelling aspects, because film is a language in itself. It might feature spoken language, but how to construct shots together, put them in a sequence and have someone look at that and be able to tell a story is really a language in itself. So it was kind of like learning a new language for me. And I was very lucky that I got a lot of set experience. So I did as much kind of menial jobs on sets because I'd never been to a set before I applied to the program. So, you know, I worked as like a junior electrician. I worked as a guy who held a light for, you know, 12 hours a day. I worked as a sound recordist. I worked as a cinematographer. I worked in various
departments.
Huh?
You gave your dues, basically.
I gave my dues, and frankly, I've been giving them ever since because it's such a vast medium that I really feel that I don't undertake a project without learning anything substantially, even now. And it's been 10 years since the point that we're talking about. So then I believe my first film was horrible. And by horrible, I don't mean to say that it was bad. I mean that people were entirely indifferent to it. And I feel that indifference is really the worst thing for any artist in any creative field. You know, sometimes things can be quote unquote bad and they can get a cult following, or, you know, they can be hilariously bad and give people a laugh. But it wasn't bad enough to be enjoyably bad, and it wasn't good enough to be good. So I remember very clearly that I felt that I failed, you know, and it was an interesting thing because, you know, before I wasn't a bad student, I wasn't a great student either, but I always thought that, you know, I was a bit lazy. So I always thought that, you know, if I'd only applied myself, I would have gotten that A or something. But this is something that I worked really hard for and worked hard on, and I just didn't jump the bar, so to speak. So then I kind of started to realize the nature of the beast and what I'd gotten myself into. So then I started working harder. I remember that I was due to come for winter holidays after my first short film, which was made in the first semester of my program. And I remember sitting at the Dubai airport and just writing and writing and writing my next script. And then kind of getting ideas and so on and so forth. And that script that I wrote, started writing at the airport, eventually became Last Remarks. And Last Remarks was a turning point for me because it did very well, played at the Locarno Film Festival. It got nominated for a student Oscar, Student Academy Award. And then things started to open up. And I found that one fine day, I got an email from the chair of our program, Professor Jonathan Torrey, an amazing editor and just a wonderful human being who mentored me a lot. And he said that, you know, there's an opportunity which I want to recommend you for. And my friend is the producer, Sarah Green, and she's produced different things. So why don't I put you in touch with her, and then you can see. And I looked up Sarah Green, and she had primarily worked with two directors. One was Terrence Malick, who I was a huge admirer of his work, and very, very kind of, I wouldn't say reclusive, but a director who deliberately stays out of the limelight and therefore has this intense air of mystery to him. Yeah. And I feel that mystery kind of permeates his films as well. So, and then she had worked with another really great indie director called Jeff Nichols, who I think at that time had just won an award at Cannes for his film Take Shelter. So I assumed that this was going to be an opportunity to work with Jeff Nichols, right? It wasn't even in my very vivid imagination to kind of apply for a job with Terrence Malick. And so I, you know, got in touch, and I had to write, you know, send in my resume and send in work samples and write an essay. And slowly I began to realize that this is for Terrence Malick, you know. And you know, I remember the only two times that I felt this tense was when I had my interview for graduate school and this. And so I wrote, and I had an interview with Mark Yoshikawa, who was one of the editors of Tree of Life. And I sent him my film that I just made, Last Remarks, and he really liked it. And he said, okay, we're shooting in LA right now, and can you come down and have a little kind of trial period as an editor on these films? And I said, sure, you know, I would go to, you know, a very, very far off remote place at that time to work with Mr. Terrence Malick. And so I went to LA, first time being in LA, and I started work, and luckily they liked what I did, and I got hired, and I moved to Austin, Texas for 2 years. And I can't say much about that experience because I've signed various forms, but it was an extraordinary, enlightening experience, not just with how to deal with cinema as a medium and push it forward, but also to kind of see what's beyond the naked eye in life, right? So to kind of look through people, so to speak, yeah, and kind of, as I was just watching this Bruce Springsteen interview, and they were asking him about how does your music, which can be regarded as very much about American mythology, resonate so much across the world? And he said, well, I try to write about the inner geography, you know, and I find that that's a really lovely term, because your inner geography is your emotional development, is the feelings that human beings feel every day in just this wild and wonderful thing called living this life.
Yeah, it's global. It's something that everyone can relate to, no matter what your background.
Yeah, exactly. So so those were the two things that I primarily took from that experience, which was to push this medium forward and try new things, and not to be afraid of trying new things, and not to be afraid of failure. But also at the same time, to be very particular about and very confident about the use of the craft, right? And I was gaining confidence at that time because it was still a formative phase. And then, you know, that finished, I moved back, started working between Pakistan and New York, and then I came back to Pakistan. And I had not made the conscious decision to move back, quote unquote, but I seem to have stayed for a while. And so whether it's in film or in photography, I try and find stories that really resonate with me and that I feel need to be told and that I feel might not be told in the way that I could tell them or I could empathize with them. And so that's really a very kind of, I know this hasn't been brief at all, I'm very sorry, but that's a kind of brief synopsis of the last 10 years.
Now, okay, let's take that and come back to one of the parts of the question, which was, I wanted to kind of understand, now that we have context around Umar, and now Umar getting his education, formulating a context of how he wants to tell stories, getting the fundamentals down, coming back to Pakistan, What are the narratives that stick out to you? How do you choose what kind of projects to pick out? Is it something that comes from your childhood growing up? Did you spend time growing up in Pakistan? Did you?
Yes, not? I did. I was born and raised Lahore, Pakistan.
So
for the most part.
Were there some narratives that came out from there that you, because you have a very unique lens, right? Like I've seen a lot of your films so far. And I love each and every one of them for their individualistic aspect. The one that you mentioned while you were talking about yourself was the one that you were inspired by Edward Allan Poe, if I'm not mistaken, the last remarks. The cinematography and the way that you've directed it, right? It has, you can't really compare that kind of work, I'm sure, when it was shot, to a lot of stuff that has been shot in Pakistan. You know, that the traditional, how movies kaise banti hain, unke take kaise hote hain, what kind of lens they use to tell the story, right? Mm-hmm. One, fine, it's inspired by someone else from the West, but even the way you kind of, you juxtapose yourself on it is a very unique lens that only you bring, right?
Thank you.
So how do you choose the stories and give them the honesty, the relevance, right? Because again, you know, what happens sometimes is it's difficult to localize something to a Pakistani audience when you've been outside most of your life. I have that issue most of my times as well. Whenever I go to Pakistan, my experiences are different. You know, my experiences are mostly from Dubai, from other parts of the world. And then when I go to Pakistan, only recently, over the last 4 or 5 years, have I started to build those experiences and ways of interacting that can give some truth to what I'm saying or relating to people, right? Mm-hmm. The way you take film as a medium, which is an extremely powerful medium, like you can break that down into like clothing is a way of storytelling, language is a way of storytelling, the way the whole thing is put together is a way of storytelling. How do you give truth to the characters? How do you give truth to the stories that you come up with?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it's always, you know, for a filmmaker, the great question of what story do you want to tell and how do you want to tell it is a big question, because filmmaking is, it's not like you know, being in the confines of a studio and painting something on a canvas. It's not like being on a word processor, writing something out and so on and so forth. You know, there's a lot of often, you know, money and infrastructure and a team of people that you have to work with, and it takes time, right? So that's why, you know, it takes time and it takes a lot out of you. Every project, it doesn't matter whether it's a short film or if it's a music video or if it's a commercial or if it's a long form film. So I think the best way that I can answer that is I see it kind of like a tree, right? A story. So does this really grow roots in me? Does an idea, because you know, as a creative person, you get ideas all the time. Well, that would be cool. Or that would be cool. And in Pakistan, there's no dearth of stories to tell, right? Millions and millions of interesting, fascinating stories to tell. But I'm like, does this grow roots in my system? And again, that idea of inner geography is that, can I use this to kind of speak to people? And can I highlight something in a way that they might not have seen before? The lens or my, what I would say now is maybe to some an idiosyncratic film style is because I see a lot, I read a lot, and there's a lot of sameness. And for me, as I said, art is not good or bad. That's not the enemy. For me, the enemy is sameness and complacency. And to just be sitting like this, you know, sorry, I disconnected my microphone, but kind of sitting back and just taking something in, you know. I want film to be an interactive experience, even if it's on a two-dimensional screen. So I want people to kind of lean in and watch a movie, you know, to kind of be drawn into it. So the other key word that you used is honesty, you know. I try for my work to be as honest or true to, if it's a character or if it's a documentary or a photo essay, to be true to the subject. To be true to what really speaks to the human experience, not just Pakistan. Third aspect and final aspect is that for me, this growing idea of Pakistani cinema and what it can be and cannot be, to me is not just telling South Asian stories in the way that, you know, things have been told in the language of film for 100 years all over the world, right? That's not enough for me personally. Every director has his own take. For me, I wanted to have the feeling of our poetry. I wanted to have the feeling of our music, our classical music. I wanted to have the feeling of our dance, you know, which is unique to this region, but there's some mystery, some magic to it that can really enthrall really any human being that's seeing, watching it or reading it, you know. So, you know, Some Lover to Some Beloved, my feature documentary, is about poetry. So, for instance, in that sense, when I first read, my father introduced me to the poetry as a teenager. And when I read it, I got a feeling from it that I felt that, you know, even after a degree in English literature, English poetry could not give to me. And there was an ineffable sense of, what is this strange feeling? You know, yeah. That you can't really put words to, you know, it really hits deep. So for me, I'm like, why isn't cinema, which is relatively, if you discount, or not discount, but kind of take the kind of newer things that are happening in Pakistani cinema right now, and it's an exciting time for that. Why can't our cinema be at the same kind of
elevated,
have that same kind of resonance that our poetry has, that our dance has, that our literature has, that our, you know, and the thing is those media got a head start because those have been around for hundreds of years. Cinema has been around for about 100 years in the world, a little over 100 years. And, you know, the trials and tribulations of Pakistani cinema have been up and down. So for me, that's really kind of what I'm aspiring to. You know, and it's an up and down process. There's, you know, you kind of hit several dead ends. You kind of have to go a little bit extra. I feel like every time I finish a project, something, I feel very drained and and you know, emotional, and I just want to be done with it, and I don't want to see it for a very long time after it's done. But that's a good thing, because later I can kind of reflect on it and be like, yeah, I really kind of took something that I was feeling and which doesn't have words, and put it in this medium. And that thing of expressing the ineffable or communicating the ineffable, and communication really is to take something that's interior and reach across and make it interior into someone else, you know? That's the goal always. So that's what I try to do.
I love that. I love how you described your truth and what you want to bring to your craft. One of the things that I noticed in Some Lover to Some Beloved as well, and if you kind of step back for a minute and see how the East, quote unquote, is represented in media, in your traditional films, usually is not in a positive light, right? Like, it's always, oh, these are the terrorists, these are, it's always backwards. And it doesn't give to the truth of what the East, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, all of these places have, the richness of culture, the deepness of everything. And Some Lover to Some Beloved, for me, the reason it resonated so much with me is, one, yes, I love the poets. I love the poetry. It introduced me to Zainuddin. I had no idea who he was. But the way it was filmed, it took me back, right? Like, I watched it 3-4 times.
Oh, wow. Thank
since
you.
You sent it to me.
I don't
right?
think I've seen it that many times.
Yeah, well, because I loved it.
Since it's been finished.
Like, here's my thing, right? Like, the reason that I loved it so much was, here is a film where I can relate to, where I can see it, and it's visually pleasing. The story is done, which resonates with me. And it's not like that traditional ma, beti, bhau kind of, and you know, that traditional crap that comes out, like, I mean, mm-hmm. no offense, but that doesn't resonate with me. But something that is culturally relevant, that is timeless, and created and shot in a way which, you know, if I was to see this in the cinema, I would not hesitate to go buy a ticket and watch the film, right? Whereas a lot of the films, like your traditional Lollywood films, the ones that you see mostly, I wouldn't be the audience. A lot of the outside wouldn't be the audience. So coming back to why I made this point was that if you want to change the narrative of Pakistan, which is what, even with Dastan Goi, we try to do, right? We try to showcase a different side of what Pakistan is and what Southeast Asia is. You're doing that in such a remarkable way, which is visual, which is emotive, which people can relate with. And that's what resonated with me. And that's what I loved about your work. Now,
thank you.
With that as a point, how do you see the evolution of cinema in Pakistan? As you said, that it's evolving at a very fast pace. Like, there's a lot of really cool directors. And I mean, I've had the honor lately to speak to some of these guys. Mm-hmm. Saim is one of them, who we actually just launched a podcast with yesterday or day before yesterday. Yeah. How do you see this evolving? And how do you see you guys kind of coming to a world stage and being able to give truth to Pakistan and to this part of the world as well? Because that is at the core of it. For me, I would love for people outside looking into Pakistan, rather than looking at what the media kind of showcases, be able to showcase what you showcase. Because that is a truth that does not see light as much about our part of the world, right? So how do you see that evolving?
So there's two things that I want to say to that. Firstly, you've used a word that's really key in what me and a younger generation of filmmakers are now trying to do, which is truth, you know. I just always felt that the truth of what I see in Pakistan, it's not about good or bad. It's not about positive or negative. Pakistan is too diverse and too complex an idea, a place, a home for us to boil down to kind of like, you know, is it acidic, is it alkaline, you know, like a kind of scientific thing. We are the sum of our experiences and our learning and our emotional development, right? So that takes in all the time that someone who, you know, I'm in my mid-30s now, and, you know, I saw the Pakistan where, you know, if you had a crush on someone, you had to call on a landline, and what you're worried about if their parents would pick up, and inevitably they would do. And, you know, I've seen that Pakistan. I've seen the Pakistan of the earliest Janoon, vital signs, videos, you know, all of that stuff. And all, you know, our fights with terrorism, our fights with our own culture, our fights with religious fundamentalism. So there's, and as I said, there's a vast, you know, it's easy to say, okay, tell the truth, yeah, right? But there's a vast amount that you can cover in that. And the way I see this evolving is really to kind of encourage strong voices, you know? So, you know, like Saim, you mentioned, is a strong voice, you know? And he has his style, which might not be similar to my style, but that's not discounting anything. It's, again, 100%. It's not about good or bad, you know? He will tell the stories that he chooses to tell, that grow roots in him. I will tell, or Hamza, or, you know, Sarmat Khusert, or Mehreen Jabbar, or, you know, various different filmmakers who are kind of doing interesting work, or Jami. I see Pakistani cinema growing or evolving as cinema has grown and evolved in almost any country at its inception, which is that someone gets an idea or wants to tell a story, which is, this is something that means something to me. And if it means something to me, it could mean something to someone else. Yeah. It's almost a naive idea in some ways. But how do I communicate that? As I was saying, can you make something that's interior to you, interior to someone else? You know, it's an extraordinarily difficult thing to do, crossing that jump, you know, because we can say things to each other, right? We can present things as a kind of tableau or as you go to see a theater show.
Yeah.
But the lovely thing about cinema is that it can be so much more than that. And as a language, not just as a medium, it has evolved to that point. So
it comes back to the point of immersive thing, in how it's immersive in nature and what you're trying to do.
I think the key thing is to encourage people and to just not, again, the enemy for me is sameness. The enemy for me is presentation. That this is a presented version of whatever, you know, what you see in dramas, what you see in ads, you know, it's very glossy, you know, and that will always exist. The thing is, that will never go away because there's too much money and the demands of interest and commerce, so on and so forth. But we can, as you said, another key word that you used was narrative, you know. If there's one narrative, you can always have a counter narrative. And I think especially a place like Pakistan deserves many narratives because it's impossible to boil this country down to a synopsis or its people down to a synopsis. You know, like you and I are having this conversation in English, right? Outside, there are some workers outside my house that are having a conversation in Punjabi, right? A very different conversation. Yeah. And they're from a very different background. They have very different lives, right? So, but the thing is that the core human emotions we all feel, you know, love, longing, on the negative side, you know, anger, hatred, so on and so forth, you know, grief, right? So it is possible, I believe, and a lot of people would not agree with me, you know, especially the people who kind of make very generalized content to kind of with an idea to have it appeal to as many people as possible. But I am a believer that you can be very specific and still have that kind of resonance, you know, and that's the kind of resonance that goes the extra distance, you know. Again, it's my idea of you're either watching something like this or you're watching something like this, you know. Like, are you drawn into it?
You become so invested, really, basically.
Yes, exactly. You know, and you'd be surprised. You know, I write things that I feel are very specific to me somehow. And I get all kinds of responses, and the responses that mean the most to me is when people take something that's in the work and connect it to their own lives. You know, it's not necessarily the kind of presentational Sas Bahu narrative or et cetera that you said, you know, but it's really about what is underneath that, right? A Sas Bahu relationship can be seen as an exterior thing, or it can be seen as an interior thing. Now, the thing is that it's just a lot more work, and you really need to know what you're doing to confidently chart the interior, right? Or the interior geographies rather than the exterior. The exterior, what? I put a camera on you, right? And you will give the camera what you will give, you know? But to go that extra distance and have this connection with you and have that connection resonate on a screen with this blend of image and sound is another different thing. So I hope that we will have new voices, that we will have voices that have had enough of what we've had for so long, you know, and we'll try to do different things, whether it's visual, whether it's thematic, whether it's story related, whether it's different kinds of subjects, whether it has to do with minorities, majorities, etc. That's up to them, you know. And in the cinema world, you know, they're usually called auteurs, but I don't really correspond to that, because I think that everyone can be an auteur. It's just a choice that you make, you know. So there is the kind of commercial. So you know, here's the thing, just to sum it up. You can either see the people who you're going to reach as an audience, or you can see them as a market, right? And I get that a lot. And just in that use of terminology lies a whole different way of thinking.
Yeah, completely. You know? It's very beautifully put, yeah.
I get that a lot. You know, oh, what's your market? You know, and what's that? That's for the producer to do, you know? That's not for me to do. Viewing them as an audience humanizes the people that you intend to communicate with, whatever your medium is, for any creative person, right? So I'm not interested in people as statistics and as numbers and as these kind of results of these very kind of categorical market analyses or studies of their wants and desires. You know, I want to see people as people, you know, where we're imperfect, where, as I said, we go through a range of emotions. Yeah. You know, I want things to appeal to that. And I feel like slowly now, Pakistan is starting to be recognized on the world stage for that.
I mean, at that point, we're still at our infancy, right? Like, Pakistan's film industry is still very much at its infancy. We are seeing an influx. We're seeing a shift as well of perspective. We're seeing revolts in terms of the narratives that are being put out and that are not being accepted by the higher-ups, which I think also, if you kind of step back for a second and realize that Pakistan is a very young country, you know, like the median age in Pakistan is 23 years old. So a lot of the narratives that have been, I mean, I'm 31. Right. So the things that I grew up with were like, I watched Alpha Bravo Charlie to the Junoon things that you mentioned. Those things are no longer relevant to the younger generation. They will not relate to that. The newer voices like yourself, like Sam, like the other guys, Sarma, that are creating relevancies, narratives that are relevant to today are the ones that are going to be intertwined with these and this younger generation's love. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be their truth. So there needs to be a shift of storytelling, of how you kind of tell stories. And that, I mean, you kind of see that, right? Like you see that in how, I mean, India is an extreme example, but if you start looking at the whole world and the way that the storytelling is changing, the things that we're focusing on are changing. One, it's because of social media. And now everyone has the ability with a camera and a phone to become not a filmmaker, but a storyteller in one way, shape, or form, right? Like you can build a story. And I've seen very beautiful ones come out of people with just an iPhone. And that access wasn't there before. So what's coming to front is, I mean, TikTok banned it, like the recent thing that TikTok, what happened with TikTok being banned and then now being put back, because there will be voices of the younger generation which are going to be unruly. They're going to be like, no, why are you taking this away from us? We don't understand. So this is going to happen. And at the same time, what you're saying, the truth to voices of the new generation of filmmakers, that's happening as well. Now, as we do evolve and we look at the macro lens of Pakistan as how Pakistan is evolving, with the younger generation growing up and wanting to hear different stories, wanting to see their truths in cinema and outside, do you see infrastructure being built around that to support them, whether it be government, private? You were just in Islamabad right now. Say, like what Zara's doing is creating a platform, right? For us to be able to showcase and watch filmmakers such as yourselves telling these kinds of stories. And I think what Zara was able to do is incredible, because it gives a platform, right? For people to come in and have a dialogue. Do you see this infrastructure changing? Do you see initiatives being taken that will help bring you guys forward, that will help support you guys in telling stories? Because that shouldn't be your issue. Creating a platform should not be your issue. It should be telling the stories. That's what you are, right? You're a storyteller at the core of it. But do you see people supporting you in the way you would like to be supported? The industry as well.
That's an interesting question. So I've always operated outside of the quote-unquote industry, if we can call it that, you know. Because I get to do my own thing and I don't have to really answer to anyone as such, right? And I don't have to answer to that mentality that this is going into a market and this is not going to an audience, right? So there's several aspects to your question which I'd like to answer. And the first is, I'm going to say something very unsexy as a Pakistani filmmaker or new wave or whatever you want to call it, you know, it's all marketing that, you know, which is that there are definitely certain limits of what kind of stories and how you can tell them in Pakistan, right? And the thing is, those limits are not going to go away anytime soon, right? They can be enforced in a more stringent manner by maybe changes in the higher ups, or they can be a little more lenient. But there's some kind of zones that you go into at your own risk, right? Sometimes, maybe even in extreme cases, a risk to your own life. So for me, making films in Pakistan is not, to me, personally, not an act of rebellion. It's a compulsion, right? One of the first things that I learned in film school was that, you know, as a student filmmaker, you were forced to operate with a crew of 2-3 people. You did not have access to, you know, because we were shooting in New York, we did not have permits, we did not have access to locations, so on and so forth. You know, we didn't have a huge kind of machine behind us to make our films and tell our stories, right? So I believe that that box, to me, as a filmmaker, is very important, of limitations, you know, because you can really go anywhere with this medium, with life, both of those things, which are intertwined. For me, the box is always necessary because I want to know, I want to be pushed, I want to be challenged with every project. Like, how far can I really take it, you know? How far can I express? Or, you know, say for instance, can I express the same thing that would ordinarily be expressed in, say, a sexual scene or a kissing scene in a different way, but as I said, have the underlying emotions to right? This is not a sexy perspective to have, you know.
No, but it's a very true one. And I actually like the way that you've kind of created an analogy of a box and the way that you're talking about it, like, because there's the confines of the box, doesn't mean that you cannot innovate and think
Yeah.
outside of it.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
Sometimes those
I would
constraints
actually,
bring
yeah.
the innovation.
I have kind of taken it upon myself that even if, say, I do an industry movie one day, which seems unlikely, but, you know, a big movie, like I don't want to have a huge crew. I don't want to have a huge team of like machinery and generators. I want to be able to tell the story with using as much as a basic setup as I can. Because, you know, it's really the hallmark of independent cinema, and that's why cinema is independent. I feel like, you know, if everything is suddenly given to me, you know, then the challenges become less. Now, at the same time, the struggle could be eased in a bit with, yes, more support, or just, you know, I don't necessarily want praised for my work. I just want to be acknowledged, you know, for the work that I've done for the last 10 years, you know. And I find that that's a bit hard to come by at times. Because, you know, if in the entertainment business, if you're not someone, you're no one, right? So getting to be someone and having certain doors open would obviously be very welcome. Just to be able to get the work out to more and more people, right? Without necessarily having to play the game or compromise your ideals, right? But I think to, you know, that famous quote for Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., which is that the arc of the moral universe is long but just, it applies as much to any creative profession, because you have to be in it to play the long innings, you know. And I tell my students this, that...
Not just creative, I think it applies to every profession.
Yes, yes. Yeah. You have to be willing to play the long innings. And, you know, if you... you know, fall yourself on the wrong side of the law, which we tend to, or the establishment or whatever, you know, certain doors do close, but they open in other ways. So the thing is not to be discouraged by it, to not take that weight of, you know, that weight that really anyone in human history has had trying to tell the truth, and the resistance, you know. At some point, Galileo was mocked for saying the world wasn't flat, you know. So as I tell my, so I teach now as well, and I try to tell my students that filmmaking in particular is like a test match, you know. There's several innings. And you have to be, if you come out all guns blazing and, you know, trying to hit the sixes and, you know, really kind of going after every ball, you're not going to get very far, you know. You're either going to burn out, or someone's going to burn you out, you know. So the thing is that, you know, that little classic cliche that, you know, you can put an indent into a rock by hammering it, or you can just have that little water drip, 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 you know. So hopefully that's the thing. So in one way, I think that I would really encourage everyone to, I mean, in this medium, you have to be smart about many things. You have to be strategic. So it's very, very important. It's not just about in the telling of the story. It's also about, you know, how can I get it through? And for me, I've never really had that problem because of being controversial or, you know, et cetera, because either I've been very fortunate that work that I've done, which kind of pushes against things, has just gotten through without anyone really questioning or noticing it. Or what's more important is that just be true to the interior truth, you know, and the exterior truth. So there's many ways. Last Remarks, for instance, you know, was really, even though it's set in partition, is really about how I felt in 2010 after losing someone to terrorist violence and the kind of imperialistic violence that we saw at that certain time with our association with that particular American government and that particular Pakistani government, right? But if you see the film, I think that it definitely spoke to the time that it came out, but it's set in partition, it's set in 1947. So you say the same things, but you get a lot through.
Yeah.
So, you know, That's really what I would say to that, or that's my personal perspective to that, is that, you know, you want to cover as much as a range as possible. And, you know, I have complete respect for people who actually do take on, who do speak truth to power in a very kind of naked and open way, and who often have to suffer for it and so on and so forth. You know, I personally just feel that, you know, if you're hitting against a wall, you can always take a little diversion, you know. So that's how I feel about it. And I think that things will change, but, you know, you study Pakistani history, it's all kinds of, like, with every kind of government that we have, the tolerance or acceptance of things has always gone up and down, right? So I think, you know, Salaam is a good example because it's a vital film. I think it's a film that every Pakistani should watch. And even though I don't think that it will, unfortunately, you know, I hope that there's a day where it will be publicly screened in Pakistan, but, you know, people will find it. So that kind of speaks to your, it's on Netflix now, I believe. Yeah. And even before, they had certain limited screenings and so on and so forth. So in this day and age, like, you know, you can't really ban anything. You can't really stop anything from happening.
Sorry, go on, continue.
The thing is that, you know, it's very, very disheartening. I've personally had a lot of pushback from a lot of people who could have given me a platform for Some Lover to Some Beloved for slightly different reasons, that, you know, oh, this is a very niche subject, not enough people are going to be interested in it. Again, there's no market for it. You know, it's too long. It's too this, it's too that. All of these people were older people. And I believe that they're just out of touch with what the other generations in Pakistan needs one. This is a film about our culture, our history, and our historical culture, right? So actually the most moving responses that I've gotten to the film so far are from younger people, you know, who I was told repeatedly that there would never be a market for them, you know? So it is personally very disheartening and discouraging, and you do have low periods and so on and so forth. But I'm starting to learn from personal experience now that, you know, the truth does find a way. And it's just, you hope that it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah, but then it comes back to that, you know, you need to be in it for the long haul. Because sometimes, especially in today's age, what I notice, I mean, I see this in myself all the time, like I want results now. I don't have patience. I want everything done yesterday. And it just, unfortunately, isn't the way the world works. Right. And we tend to get discouraged. Mm-hmm. But I think the lesson is always to kind of, you know, go for it in a way that if this is your truth, then that's not going to show up in the first day. It's going to be that journey. Yeah. It's going to showcase that, you know, that want the longer time you spend on it. Dude, I think that it's incredible what you're doing. I'm honestly like,
thank you so much.
In awe of what you do. Last question for you is, what's the most relatable, vivid memory of growing up in Pakistan? Or how do you unpack Pakistan for people that are coming from outside, or ask about what's Pakistan like? How do you describe it?
I've gotten that question a lot because I spent
a lot of
time in the US and abroad. And frankly, to be very honest with you, I never tried to unpack it for people. Not in a sentence, not in a paragraph. But how do you, you know? I hope that with my work, and that to a reasonable body of work, I can give a sense to people, right? But I don't try and unpack it. I think that there's just so much here, and there's just so much. It's really a kind of a gold mine of creative material, and so many people, so many different kinds of people, so many different kinds of beliefs, so many different kinds of journeys, that you know, it can get very overwhelming. But as I said, you know, it's about the long haul. So if you can't say it all in one work, and I personally would not want to, because I don't think you can do it, you know, you can hopefully build up a body of work, you know, and whenever it's time to shed this mortal coil, in the wise words of Shakespeare, you know, I just hope that I've built that body of work and, you know, then it's time to go. We all have to go, you know. It's what we leave behind, you know, that's really that one hopes to resonate, you know, even if you don't do anything, you know, artistic, quote unquote, you leave yourself behind in memories, you leave yourself behind in words, you leave yourself behind in actions that people will remember, you know. And to come back to one memory, I can tell you one thing that's very personal, which is that I grew up with two elder sisters. And at that time, you know, I think it was kind of the late 80s, early 90s. And I remember this song by this kind of hair metal band, which, you know, was kind of like the main commercial rock at that time, by this band called Warrant, and it was called Be My Cherry Pie. And I loved that song as a kid, you know, and that band never had another hit. And it was a very kind of 80s hit. And then, you know, I was feeling nostalgic, and I remember like my sisters listening and kind of rocking out to that song. And I would, you know, rock out to it too as a kid. And then I heard it recently, and it is such a suggestive song, you know, and we completely did not realize it at the time. I mean, Be My Cherry Pie, like, you know, just the title can raise enough flags, you know. And so, you know, that's kind of really what I think about growing up in Pakistan, is that, you know, you know, for all of us, I think there's some moment of sweetness and innocence that we can always kind of, you know, which will never come again, probably, but that we can still kind of hold on to, you know. And the great thing about creative work is that you can recreate that, or you can reimagine or retell that. And, you know, you hope that it's going to stand the test of time and last much longer than you are.
Omar, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you so much, Ahmad. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I do too.
Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us on Instagram and YouTube for more stories. You can get in touch with us via email, contactdastangoy@gmail.com. Until next time, thank you, shukriya, meherbani, khudafiz.